Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com senior editor, with another episode of Hardwood Handicappers. Hardwood Handicappers is sponsored by Better Picks, the fantasy app that turns your basketball takes into cash. Download the Better app and use code VSINPOD to get $10 free, no deposit needed. That's VSINPOD, V-S-I-N-P-O-D. Today is a special episode of Hardwood Handicappers. We are bringing back one of the founders or co-founders of this thing with Jonathan Von Tobel, host of Money Moves, joining me today. JVT, how are you doing? It is Thursday, November 13th, 9:30 a.m. Eastern.
I'm very happy. Hardwood Handicappers, as you know, is back. You're hosting it. It's always good when the pod is back. I would say, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I would say the founder of Hardwood Handicappers. In fact, I do have an old blog built on WordPress. I think it might still be alive, hardwoodhandicappers.com, which is where it all started way back when, because I would take all these notes for our shows between Humans and I, and Humans was like, hey, why don't you just post those notes somewhere so people can read them? And I was like, all right, sure, whatever. And then that turned eventually into a cancel pod that was then revamped. So here we go, baby. I'm freaking happy it's back.
Yeah, I'd say you and Kelly are like the Winklevi twins, and I'm like Mark Zuckerberg or something. I stole the podcast from you guys.
You stole it when I only get like what, like one? So was Andrew Garfield's character, was he one of the, I've never seen The Social Network. Is he one of the Winklevoss guys or whatever?
I forgot you don't like movies, but he's not one of the Winklevoss. He's Eduardo Saverin, and I don't know if he's going to be in the sequel that is only based on loose events or something
like that. Oh, okay. All I know is that on TikTok, like every 6 months, I see the clip of him like, sorry, my prod is at the cleaners, and like I don't know the context of the scene in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. All right, we won't bother the people anymore with Social Network, Social Network 2. What were your takeaways from last night, a night where we saw Nikola Jokic go for 50-plus, in another dominant performance in the Thunder? Anything that you saw last night that you know, wanted to mention?
So I think there's two things, and it's actually, it ties into those two things that you mentioned. Let's start with the Thunder. I said this to Stormy yesterday's show. This Thunder team might win like 73 games. Like they're so freaking good. And I was tempted because I think you were on the same side. So I played the Warriors the other night against Oklahoma City. Never really in it. They kind of kept them at arm's length the whole time, won in a pretty dominating fashion. And part of me was like, why am I not just playing the Lakers again tonight? Well, obviously, last night, you know, this Thunder team looks like they might be the best team maybe in history. And sure enough, they do it again. And as you have covered, and as we all know, the fact that they're doing this, Zach, with J-Dub, as you called him the other day, the good Jalen Williams, the fact that he has not played a single minute for this team, the fact that guys like A.J. Mitchell and others are really starting to shine, he and Wiggins and others really starting to provide some shooting that they desperately needed a season ago. The fact that these young dudes are really starting to develop is such a big deal for a team that's got obviously a lot of minutes on them, considering the run to the NBA Finals a season ago. I think this team, I think we're going to look up and watch this team push for those 72, 73, do we even dare say 74 wins? Like, they look really good. But the other crazy part about it is I think the Nuggets are going to push them and force them to potentially do that. Jokic is incredible. Obviously, he said he puts up 55. Second leg of a back-to-back, they get pushed by Sacramento the night before. And, you know, I always love these good teams. I said this on the show the other day where you go into like that late third, early fourth, and it's like the Nuggets go into the huddle against the Kings and like, guys, do you want to like win this game? Like maybe by like 15 points or so. And everybody's like, yeah, sure, let's go do that. And then they just go and stretch out a lead and absolutely dominate. The top of the West with those two, it's exactly what we thought it was going to be, but they look every bit as good. And it's really cool to watch.
Yeah, I think I've come around on the Thunder being a 70 plus win team. I think before the season, I thought under on the win total looked like the right call. I thought that teams would be gunning for them and we'd maybe see a slip. There has not been a slip. If anything, that team is deeper than it was last year. Like you said, AJ Mitchell's been incredible this season. Everybody is doing their job. So I've definitely come around on that. We'll talk a little bit later about the Western Conference futures picture and whether we think the Thunder are going to run away with it. But yeah, similar takeaways for me from last night. Tonight, though, we are starting with a pretty good game with the Raptors taking on the Cavaliers, 7 p.m. Eastern in Cleveland. Cavaliers laying 7.5, total 239.5. Do you have anything in this game?
Yeah, I've got a thought here, and you know, you want to wait for the injury report, but I would assume after they sat everybody yesterday that everybody's going to be a full go here today. What, Garland, Mobley, and Mitchell all did not play yesterday for Cleveland as part of the second game in their baseball series in Miami. So one of the angles that I've been riding with this Cavs team since they've gotten healthy, and that's when Merrill came back, Garland came back, these team totals, Zach, they've hit their team total over for five straight games now. This has been an offense that has really taken off when they have all their pieces available. And hell, even last night, even in a high-paced game against Miami, they hit their team total again now with 130 points. Some of the numbers for Cleveland, as I put in my notes, like healthy Cleveland, Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell on the floor together. They're outscoring opponents by 26.9 points every 100 possessions in non-garbage time. Their offensive rating in those minutes is 129. Since November 2nd, as I call it, like the day they got healthy, a plus 10.1 net rating, an offensive rating of 123.8. They're actually covering by 4.3 points per game. But I like this team so much on offense that I think, again, you might look toward a team total over here. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, how much do you take away from some of the tracking data in the early going of this season? Because Toronto over their last six games has been very good. They're 5-1 straight up and against the spread. They have one of the best defensive ratings in the NBA over that stretch. But if you look at it, I think it's actually fourth best or somewhere around that range in terms of their defensive rating over the last six games. But I was looking into the tracking data. Cleaning the Glass has their location effective field goal percentage. So what would that team's effective field goal percentage be if opponents shot league average in all of the attempts they gave up? They would be 29th. They're at 56.1%, Toronto. Opponents are shooting just like, I think, 29% from three or somewhere in that range over the six-game stretch. And if you look at the amount of uncontested threes they've allowed over the six games, they're giving up 23.8 uncontested three-point attempts per game. That's 27th most. But opponents are shooting 34% on those looks. That's seventh best. So all of this, I think, comes together for me to say, look, if Cleveland's got everybody and they're on this offensive run and this Toronto team's got some fugaziness about them, looking at their team total over tonight for Cleveland, once again, I think is just in the cards.
Yeah, and I'll say this about Toronto. Like, it's kind of the same thing we saw last year, this, you know, post All-Star break when they were, the number two defense in the league. It was a lot of very lucky shooting against them. It wasn't necessarily everything that they were doing. I mean, I do like the way that they kind of use that length they have, and they are very aggressive on the ball, but I do think that they are going to come crashing down a little bit on the defensive end. I guess the one positive I'll say is that they are top 10 in offense this year. And I think that, you know, this is a team that we looked at as more of a top 15, top 18 team. I think everything is kind of coming along nicely there. But man, I do kind of like your angle with this, because I think I was leaning Toronto if I had to take anything on a side or a total, but you can kind of hit, you know, you could hit Toronto plus 7.5 and win the Cavaliers one if this ends up being, you know, a high scoring game. I mean, the one thing I had written down here is that the Raptors are 7-2 against the spread under Darko Rajakovic when playing teams that average 93 plus points per game. So they are playing well against up-tempo teams under Rajakovic. But yeah, I think I like your angle better. And I'll throw out, I do have a player prop in this game, RJ Barrett, over 3.5 assists at minus 128. He has had 4+ dimes in 6 of the last 7 games. And I don't think it seems, you know, overly fluky. He's averaging 8.0 potential assists per game in that span, 5.3 adjusted assists per game. So, you know, he's doing a good job of setting guys up. He's had the ball more than I thought he would, you know, playing on a team with Ingram and Barnes. So I think we kind of see that keep up tonight in a game that, like, I believe we both think could be somewhat high scoring.
Yeah, I mean, they're both going to be willing to get up there. They're both top 10 teams in terms of pace. Cleveland's been, I think, a very solid sign here. It's been very fun to watch with their increased pace. They're fifth right now in terms of pace, tempo, and Toronto's 10th. So yep. You should get the possessions. You should get the opportunities. Again, going back to what we're talking about here with the team total over, which, by the way, for Cleveland right now is 123.5 over at DraftKings. So shop around to see where it's at. But you should, in theory, get the opportunity, because this should be an up-and-down game, especially with some fresh legs for the best players for Cleveland.
Yep. Anything else on that one?
No, I think that was the only thing. I mean, there's obviously some big-picture stuff here. I'm just like curious to continue to watch Cleveland. I love this team offensively, as we're kind of talking about here. And in an Eastern Conference that, again, looks like, you know, like whatever it looks like, I kind of, you and I differed on this last year. I kind of liked Cleveland, you know, as one of those like sneaky leaners, like, yeah, you know, Cleveland might be kind of good. And then injuries decimated them. So if they're going to be healthy and this upside's there with this team, I mean, this might be one of the best, if not the best offensive teams in the league.
Yeah, and I do feel like there's not enough context provided when we talk about the Cavaliers-Pacers series from last year. Like, it was an amazing run by Indiana, but I feel like they're, you know, we headed into this season with this kind of narrative that Cleveland kind of choked again in the postseason. I don't really view it that way. Like, they were banged up. I mean, Garland needed surgery. It's a team that was very much not healthy, and I don't think that it was just like they got blasted by a Pacers team that was too fast, too good. Like, they are a very good team.
Well, they did. I was it game three they choked away? Well, there was one single game where, we had the stupid Indiana Pacers comeback and Tyrese Halliburton game winner. They did choke a game, but I'm with you in that, they're viewed as this catastrophic failure, when in reality it was like, oh, no, like, injuries just hit them extremely hard down the stretch. And who knows? Maybe Indiana still wins that series, but it should be viewed in the context of, like, if you're looking at Cleveland going, I don't think they can do it because they don't have, like, the DNA, I think they were very injured last year.
Yeah, and I did like them bringing in Lonzo Ball. I know it hasn't been a great start to the season, but I like that type of player for them off the bench.
Yep, 100%. I've been actually trying to sniff around some Lonzo props. I haven't really gotten a read for him yet. I know his assist have been pretty good, but outside of that, I'm with you. Like, I kind of wanted to wait, like, you know, maybe some sixth man of the year, whatever it is, but he's clearly trying to find his way. But it's one of those pieces where you let him take his bumps, and by the time you get to the postseason, if he's, like, anywhere near Lonzo Ball, you've got a good backcourt defender who can run your offense. I think it's part of the reason why, too, they're playing a little bit quicker is, you know, he's getting out there for like 25 minutes and letting them run. And I think it's just a really good addition for a team that needed some more consistency at guard. Who was our boy last year? Why can I not think of our white guard?
Ty Jerome,
thank you. Yep. who is an absolute gunner, but at times completely disappeared. I think you might be able to get more out of Lonzo if he somewhat finds his footing.
Yeah, and Jerome, like, a complete liability defensively. Yes. I think Ball is a very good defender still, which is kind of crazy considering what he's been through.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, let's move on to Pacers at Suns, 9 p.m. Eastern. Phoenix is laying 4.5. Total's 233.5. Suns 5-1 straight up, 6-0 against the spread at home. Do you think they continue against Indiana tonight?
I mean, it's hard to say no. It's hard to say no. I mean, this team's been, your Suns have been very, very surprising. Look, I'll say it. Like, I thought they were going to be terrible, especially on offense. And while they haven't been, like, the best offensive team in the NBA, they've still been carrying their weight. They've been pretty good. I think they're 10th now after last night in offensive efficiency. Their defense is very good. They're actually top five team on the season in spread differential, so they've been a little underrated by the betting market. And we know what's going on with Indiana. I mean, not only is Indiana really struggling on offense because they just have nobody. You know, I thought this was, I think it was Zach Lowe that brought it up on one of his shows. It might have been one of the Windhorse pods either. But either way, the thought out there being that I think this Pacers team now understands, like, oh, like, nah, this is a gap year. Like, we should probably just kind of steer into this. Let guys who are injured, like, fully heal instead of maybe bringing them back a game or two early. And you're really seeing it reflected in the numbers. Their offense is abysmal. They're averaging 106 points per 100 possessions. Their defense is 24th. They're overworking Siakam. They're failing to cover by 7 points a game. It seems somewhat easy considering they're on the second leg of a back-to-back in a game that got a little tight down the stretch last night, but I don't know why I would play anybody but Phoenix here.
Yeah, I really thought that Indiana would be a little bit better this season, but like you said, like, they are taking their time with these injuries. Also, everybody is hurt in general. Like they just kind of got hit by a huge injury wave right at the start of the season. And yeah, Phoenix has been really good. I mean, Phoenix has been a borderline top 10 team on both ends of the floor in terms of half court efficiency. They are taking a top five amount of threes per game. They are making a top five amount of threes per game, and just everything about it looks really good. I mentioned to you and Kelly last night, said it before in this pod, like, they actually are a little Pacers like in that it's Devin Booker as the focal point of this offense. He is doing absolutely everything for them. If they need 30, he'll get 30. If he needs 10 assists, he'll go get it. And then everybody else that comes in can do something, whether that's Grayson Allen, who's now on a heater, or, you know, Mark Williams, who I think has been really, really good defensively after being billed as kind of a one-way player. It's just kind of all clicking. Jordan Ott is a player that we'll talk – a coach, we'll talk about it a little bit, but someone that might be interesting in coach of the year markets. But, yeah, I think it's either Suns minus four or under 232.5 for me if I'm looking at something in this game in terms of sides or totals. But I am going to go back to Grayson Allen, over 15.5 points, minus 122. He's got 16-plus points in the last four games he's played without Jalen Green. They are running absolutely everything through him. It's just a really, really interesting stretch we've seen from him. He's kind of having – he's in his Norm Powell era is what I'd say about Grayson Allen. And I do think that this Pacers team can struggle against spot-up shooters, can struggle against teams that, you know, kind of run good dribble handoffs, you know, off ball screens. So that's what we're going to be doing with Allen tonight.
Yeah, it is. So right now, career high in terms of usage rate, 21.1%. Like, this has been surprising for me. You know, I watched him last night. I think he had a sequence where he hit like back-to-back threes or whatever. It was kind of late in that game. And I'm like, dude, what is happening? You know, they're just, it's almost, maybe this is an unfair comp, but it's kind of like what I thought that Brooklyn would do with Michael Porter Jr., which is just like, man, we don't really have that much. Like, so let's just run a lot of stuff for this dude who can knock down threes and let's see what we can do. And I think Allen's got a little bit more off the bounce game than a guy like Michael Porter Jr. So, you know, he could attack closeouts. He can do those sort of things. It's been impressive to watch. And he's got career highs. Do we do this? I mean, I know we're going to talk awards, but most improved? I mean, we're talking career high in usage. The assist rate is in the 90th percentile. It's by far his highest so far this year. Like, there's a lot of cases you can make for him to be a most improved candidate.
You know, I actually was looking at this before we got on. I don't even think he's listed at DraftKings.
I know.
I was looking at DraftKings odds. It's funny, though. Over the offseason, like, they talked about how they asked him to get into Devin Booker's shape was the quote. And everyone's like, why? Like, I don't know. And then they started talking him up, and they're like, oh, they're clearly just trying to move him. Now he's, like, a huge part of everything they're doing. He's actually available plus 200 to score 20-plus tonight on an alternate. And Opta AI has him going for 18.6. Like, this is a game where I think you go with the over 15.5 and also sprinkle a little 20-plus.
By the way, just real quick, 9 more points in terms from his career average to this year. He's got to be listed. This has to be something.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it needs to happen a few more games. Like, it's crazy. There are a lot of players listed, and he's not one of them. Ryan Dunn's on the list, and he's not been as improved as Grayson is.
Man, I'm down. Well, I know we'll talk awards, but still, I think that should be, we should start the campaign.
All right, let's move on to the last game of the night. I think this is one where Kelly Bidlin texted us. He has a play on the home team here. It's the Hawks at the Jazz, 9 p.m. Eastern. Jazz getting 2.5 points at home, total 232.5. I think I'm with Kelly on this one. Like, I just look at this game as Utah in 5 home games has a net rating of plus 7.6. Atlanta in 7 road games, plus 7.0. I think that last night's like 50-point win over Sacramento, probably doing a lot of work there. I think that the Jazz are the right side here. What do you think?
Absolutely. So I'll take you all the way back to, I think, was it August or September when I was going through schedules? And I think I texted you guys. I was like, hey, Thursday, November 13th, circle it. Utah's at home after like a day. It's in the middle of a home stretch. They get Atlanta on like the second leg of a back-to-back, third game in 4 nights in the midst of a road trip. And this is where we're at now, minus Trae Young. It's hard to turn down the spot for Utah. Now, like, over the larger sample size, like, they've been fine, but they're coming off of that blowout win over the Pacers. They look like they're really feeling it. Ace Bailey, who we can talk about, is really starting to come into his own like these last few games, especially the last game against Indiana. But I would trust Utah in a spot like this to take advantage of a situation. So, yeah, give me Utah. And I think we should talk about Atlanta in the grand scheme of things, because I think they're starting to learn some things about their team that maybe they can live without Trae Young, which is pretty interesting. But I think big picture, I'm impressed with Atlanta. Situationally, give me the Jazz. I played them on the money line today.
Yeah, and these are the types of games that they've just covered under Will Hardy. I know it's a small spread, so covering really means probably winning, but 27-12-1 against the spread at home as an underdog of 6 or fewer points under Hardy. And these are also the games that the Hawks have not won under Quinn Snyder. Like, they are 2-5 straight up and against the spread when coming off a road blowout win of 20-plus. Not a good team as a road favorite under Snyder. And yeah, I'm really torn on the long-term picture for the Hawks, because I do feel like this team desperately needs what Young brings offensively. But at the same time, like, maybe you could get in someone that could do half of what he does but fits better. So I'm going to be interested in seeing kind of which way they go with that.
Yes, they definitely need an offensive creator at like a point guard. That is absolutely something that this team would need. But some of the numbers for you, for the audience here looking at this, in the 7 games without Trae Young, they've covered by almost 11.5 points per game. So like the market hasn't really caught up with how much better, how much good, or how well they are playing. They have a plus 10.8 net rating over that span. They have the second best defensive rating in the league in the game since they lost Trae Young, 106.2 points per 100 possessions. And their starting lineup, which is interesting because it doesn't really look great offensively on paper. It's Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Dyson Daniels, Zachary Risacher, Jalen Johnson, and Kristaps Porzingis. They're outscoring opponents by 13.1 points per 100 possessions in non-garbage time with those 5 on the floor. And their offensive rating in those minutes is 124.1. So like somehow they're generating offense with these five guys out there. I'm with you though. Like you need a little bit more, I think, in the big picture at guard, and Trae Young might be able to provide that. But dude, this team, it's exactly what we've kind of been waiting for the last 3 years. You saw the talent, you saw the wing talent. Guys like Jalen Johnson were stat sheet stuffers, and they're finally starting to kind of show that. I would ask maybe, I don't know if it happens this year, but if you're Atlanta, you're definitely asking the question, all right, what can we get for Trae Young? Or at least you're starting to think about that. Again, I don't know if he's flipped here at this deadline, but I think there's a, you know, a greater and growing chance that Trae Young's in a different uniform next year.
Yeah, I have no idea what that trade would look like. And I do kind of wonder, like, what the game last night did for all those stats. I did not look at them as closely before they just blasted Sacramento. And that was a team that I thought would show some fight last night. Got absolutely killed back in the Kings at home. But yeah, they're awful. They're terrible. But yeah, that is one of the biggest question marks heading into kind of the deadline and the offseason, is what's going to happen with Trae Young. Before we move into some futures, I just want to say, attention any listeners who are new to VSiN, signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right, so I wanted to ask you something that you kind of started talking about a little bit before with the Cavaliers. Have you seen anything from anybody outside of the Knicks and Cavaliers that makes you think that the conference is kind of as open as everybody was saying before the year? Has anybody kind of caught your eye in the East as a potential contender this season?
I mean, okay, so the obvious one is Detroit in terms of their record. I don't know if I'm buying it, though. Like, you know, when you need 45 shots from Cade Cunningham the other night, and like, you know, they're winning games, and I think it's really good, and they're going to be a top seed. I think that would be very obvious. And who knows, like, what they look like when Jaden Ivey, you know, gets healthy, and, you know, maybe they have the upside to potentially get it done. But I find it hard to realistically look at any of these other teams, and that includes the Atlanta squad we just talked about that I know we all like, and say, you know what, like, I feel like I can find myself supporting the idea that you're making it to the NBA Finals. Now, if we're talking conference finals, oh, you can get me on a ton of these teams. You know, I could even see Miami with this offense. Like, this offense has been very impressive. And when they're fully healthy, making a run in the Eastern Conference Finals, because I think a lot of these teams are very close to one another. But right now, I would thoroughly agree with where the betting odds are, that the Cavaliers at +210, to me, when they're at full strength, look like the best team in the Eastern Conference. Then it's the Knicks. And then a line of demarcation. And I mean, who knows what you want to do with Philly? We can get into that mess. But to me, the market is absolutely correct here.
Yep. I have it written down with Knicks, Cavs in the top tier. I have Pistons in tier two, kind of alone. I mean, they are number three in defensive rating. They're top 15 in offense. Like, Jaden Ivey, we think, will come back at some point. And they kind of are armed to go out and get somebody. If someone becomes available, I'd be interested in seeing what that is. I mean, I have heard Lowe and Windhurst talk about, you know, Lauri Markkanen, who would be like a dream fit for them, but they would have to give up a ton to get Lowry away from Utah. Like, I do think that the Jazz, like, we hear that they do not want to move Markkanen, and that they think that they're closer than they maybe are. They might be closer than it seems to the public, because we've talked about Keontae George. Like, that is a very good player, and Kessler's a really good center. So maybe they are. I do think that one of those teams in that group of like Heat, Sixers, Bucks, I could see one of them making the finals. I know that seems really crazy. Like, I think Milwaukee is definitely the one that, like, out of that group kind of sticks out as, like, really? Like, they could make the finals? But those guys have all played really well that they've brought in on the cheap deals. I mean, like, Cole Anthony, Ryan Rollins, Kevin Porter Jr., like, that does not look like a, you know, conference finals level starting backcourt, and it probably isn't. But when those guys are out there with Giannis, with AJ Green spacing, like, it has looked good when the entire team is healthy. And I think that that's the type of team that maybe the record won't be good at the end of the season, but like, if the Knicks are facing the Bucks and the Bucks are fully healthy, I won't feel good about the Knicks getting the job done.
No, I mean, I would agree. I think they've been very impressive. The team that I would gravitate toward at the long shot, though, is those Heat. I mean, I don't know, man. I've always been impressed with Spoelstra, but just this the fact that you're able to, as a successful head coach, look inward and go, all right, cool, what can we change? Let's go get this offensive assistant to kind of help us on the fringes and install this new looking offense and see what happens. And boom, all of a sudden they're this fast paced, high octane offense, and it works really well when they're healthy, because I know Bam's got this injury and we haven't seen Tyler Hero. But the upside of Miami, I think, really intrigues me. And then when we're talking about betting conference odds, you know, 22-1, and to get to a conference finals, you know, obviously that's a very hedgeable number when you finally get that far. And should they get that far, they're a team that I've been kind of looking out of the corner of my eye, because, you know, I've been anti-Heat for a while in terms of just they've been this overrated team that I think has really pushed it to the limit and has not been as good as their record. But this is, I think, one of the versions of Miami where you're like, oh, yeah, like, no, this is a legitimately good offense that could be even better defensively when they're fully healthy.
Yeah, and, like, they've gotten the bounce back from Hawkes, like, with that they desperately needed, that just makes the entire rotation look that much better. And, well, like you said, like, it's number one in pace. The offense is elite without Tyler Hero. Hero is going to come in and give them the best score that they have on that roster. Like, it's going to be very cool to see what that looks like. And, yeah, with Spo, it's like, it's not just that he hired some assistants. It's like he hired a failed assistant in Memphis that was fired because of Ja Morant. But it's just like the having the kind of balls to go out and get that type of coach to help you put in a new system is crazy. And it's a system that I think that every team in the league is looking at like, what the hell is this? Because what is it? The league average ball screens in a game is like 40 plus easily. And they're running like 15 or less. It's something like crazy like that.
I think, I mean, he's 9-1 or a little bit longer to win coach of the year. I think there's a strong argument to be made that he should be the favorite. I mean, just given the outright coaching decisions he is making, and these NBA beat writers are plugged into these sort of things. You know, Mitch Johnson, it's been a fine job. I think who else is at the top? I was just looking at this. JB Bickerstaff. Yeah, they're going to win a lot of games. But in terms of outright coaching jobs, Spoelstra, JJ Redick, and Billy Donovan, the guys who are 3, 4, and 5 on the list, I think those are actually your top three. And I wouldn't mind adding any of those three to the portfolio if you had any.
Yeah, so I was going to bring up Coach of the Year, like, because I do think that Spo is a really good value bet. And I do think, like Spo hasn't won this, right? So, like, there's also that.
Correct.
It's like, if it's close, I think that these voters are going to want to give it to him. I was going to throw out two names outside of Spo, one being Tiago Splitter, one being Jordan Ott. That's the homer pick in me. Yeah. I just feel like if Phoenix finishes somehow 42-40, like that's like the miracle season for them. But I do think that there's a lot of value in that market compared to others.
Dude, I mean, with Splitter, how much does he get because of the situation? Like if they're going to be a play-in team or somewhere in there, if they make that, there's definitely an argument to be made. Like, this turnaround's been great. And I know they invested in the roster and they're a little bit better in terms of their veteran presence. But, you know, the development of some of these young guys like Avdija, and then just seeing the way this team is defending and playing. I mean, look, Oklahoma City's got one loss. And I know it was the second leg of a back-to-back, the third game of four nights. But that team came back from down 22 and really clamped that team down up there in the Pacific Northwest. They're a good team, dude. That Splitter's a really good shout.
Yep. And then, all right, one thing I wanted to ask you in the Western Conference, because you did say it before, like, it's Nuggets and Thunder look like the top two teams. What have you made of Houston's start? Do you think that Houston's in that tier? Because I feel like the Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard point guard split has gone about as well as you could have possibly imagined with Van Vliet out. I actually saw Shepard is in the top 20 in box plus minus at Basketball Reference. I think defensively he's looked a lot better than he did in that first opening night game where everyone was kind of roasting him on Twitter for just being like a standstill traffic cone out there. But like he is kind of quietly racking up stocks and just playing really well on both ends of the floor. I feel like they have to be happy with what's going on at point guard.
Yes. I mean, so I think that they deserve, and I should not have not mentioned them. I just think OKC and Denver are in a little bit of a class of their own, and then right behind them is Houston. Similar to what you talked about in the East with Detroit, except those three tiers are much above where the Eastern Conference is right now.
Yep.
But to me, it's been, to your point, this is like the 10th best half-court offense in the NBA. That's not something I expected, given what that point guard position was going to look like. And if they can continue to head in that direction, and I know like when he got injured, there was a lot of, you know, Fred VanVleet might be coming back near the end of the year if they make a deep enough run. So don't think that this is going to be over or anything. So if that's going to be the case, they're definitely up there in terms of their consideration. They've been incredible. And as much as you hate to say it early on, it does seem like this is not a three-horse race, but those three horses at the top of the West, I think, are starting to distance themselves from the rest of the Western Conference.
Yeah, and I had been kind of warming up to the Lakers a little bit until last night's game, just seeing them on the court with the Thunder. Like, it looked like a JV team playing a varsity team, maybe even worse. So
I think they're going to be good in the regular season. I don't know if you're talking about legitimately competing with Houston, with Denver, with Oklahoma City in a best of seven, like currently constructed, even like bring LeBron back. Those are short series for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, I think so. And Minnesota's a team that I've been really high on. It feels like they're a class below these teams right now.
Yep, I would totally agree.
All right, and then I just wanted to wrap up with, you know, any other awards talks that you wanted to get out there. I mean, I'm happy to hear. I do think, you know, Rookie of the Year is still a little interesting to me. I mean, Flagg is the deserved favorite. I don't think it's by as much as we thought. I mean, Knipple and Edgecombe have both been great. I am going to be taking Derek Queen 50-1. I brought this up actually with Kelly and Gill on a numbers game last Thursday as a play at like 100-1. I didn't end up taking it, but double digits in five straight games, 4.5 assists per game in those games, played 38 minutes last night, played 25 plus in, I believe, four straight games. Just feels like they're about to roll the ball out to him and say, look, you're our guy now. Like, we made that trade. That trade's going to look terrible, but you are very good, and we want everyone to see it.
So I would agree with all that. The only thing I was going to bring up, we're going to talk about this on the show today on Money Moves. What if this push in these last three games for Ace Bailey is legit, and we're starting to see him emerge here a little bit? Because he was very good this last game, had 20 points, obviously career high, everything like that. We're really starting to see him get comfortable. His three-point shot over the last four games, he's increased it to 40%. If this turnaround is real and it's legit, he's 100-1 right now to win Rookie of the Year. There is still plenty of runway for him to make his case to win this award. I know the rookies have been great, but if that scoring push is legitimate from Bailey, I know I already have, you know, I think, would you have like 15-1 on him? And I've got a little at 9-1, but I'm going to add a little bit more at 100-1 because I think that there's a chance he's starting to find his groove here.
I think I'm going to join you on that, just like almost only because like it'll make my total number like 55-1. And I'll feel better about it. But yeah, I do think that like if he continues to play this way, there's definitely a chance he gets in there. I thought he would kind of have that 30 plus minute per roll right away, and it's taken them a little bit of time, but yeah, score 20 points a couple more times in the next couple of weeks and continue to rebound well, and you're going to be right back in that conversation. So definitely a good shout.
By the way, just a quick, because we're talking about awards and we brought this up, how is Sandro Mamukelashvili listed for most improved but not our guy Grayson Allen?
I don't know, Mamu. It's been questionable the last few nights too.
We got to get Grayson up there. That's a huge push. But then of course, when you like ask for it, like the email or ask or whatever it is, then you get it. Like then they'll be like, 25-1. No, you can't go from unlisted to 25-1. I need like 100-1.
Yeah. All right. We're going to run down our best bets here. Before we do, I just wanted to remind you, it's time to put your hoops IQ to the test with Better Picks. Open the Better app, pick more or less on your favorite players' points, rebounds, assists, then watch the sweat in real time. Use code VSINPOD for $10 free, no deposit needed, plus Better's got insane multipliers up to 1,000 times on just two picks. Download Better, BETR, and get in the game with promo code VSINPOD, VSINPOD. All right, let's do our best bets for tonight. I have RJ Barrett over 3.5 assists at -128, Grayson Allen over 15.5 points at -122, and Jazz +2.5 at -110. JVT, let the people know what you are taking.
Cavaliers team total over 123.5 tonight, and I will go with the Jazz as well, but on the money line for this evening, you can find about +120 out there. So Jazz +120.
Awesome. Well, JVT, thank you for joining me on the show again. Hopefully we could do it again soon. Maybe we could do some like Jonathan Von Thursdays or something. That would be a nice little touch, but we got to get Kelly on as well. We need to do a full three reunion at some point. So I'm looking forward to the next time we could all talk ball in a longer setting, but make sure you come back and listen to Hardwood Handicappers, and everybody, good luck with your bets tonight.